about 100 years, and then maybe change pace a little bit. Turn to 1 Kings chapter 18. 1 Kings chapter 18. Every time we come together in one way or another, we hear about Calvary, one of the great mountains of the Bible, the greatest in its towering significance above all the other mountains. We have before us tonight another mountain of the Bible, and one of the others of great significance, the one that determined the future course of the history of the nation of Israel. It all centered around one man, one man. The camps were divided into two parts. On one side of the line was one man, and on the other side there was a nation represented by some 850 false prophets. The one man was Elijah. The nation was Israel. 850 false prophets were 450 false prophets of Baal and 400 prophets devoted to the worship of another god in Israel. I want to break into the reading tonight with verse 17 of 1 Kings chapter 18. And it came to pass, when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab said unto him, Art thou he that troubleth Israel? Isn't it interesting how we get our responsibilities all confused when we're walking in sin? I don't know about you, but when I'm away from God, I tend to blame everybody in sight except the right person, the one who's really responsible. And Ahab said to Elijah, Art thou he that troubleth Israel? And Elijah answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandments of the Lord, and thou hast followed Balaam. Now the word Balaam is the plural of the word Baal. You followed false gods, a plurality of them, that fall under the heading of the name of the god Baal. Now therefore, send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal 450, and the prophets of the groves 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel, and gathered the prophets together unto Mount Carmel. And Elijah came unto all the people and said, How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word. Then said Elijah unto the people, I only remain a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. I'm going to stop the reading with verse 22. We're going to retain the rest of the story of Mount Carmel for a future time, for future reference, perhaps God willing next Sunday evening as we continue this series in the lives of Elijah and Elisha. But I want to ask your attention this evening to 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 21. And Elijah came unto all the people. I don't think this is editorial. I believe the word came suggests something about him. I think he had been a recluse in the caves on the top of Mount Carmel, near the top of Mount Carmel, in the time where all the people were gathering, and he had been spending the time getting his lightning rod up to catch the fire of heaven. Elijah came unto all the people and said, How long halt ye between two opinions? Now I want you to notice the time factor there. How long? How long? How long? How long? I think this is the question God invariably addresses to his people when there is a spiritual declension in the land. That's quite likely, if this is a typical congregation on Sunday evening of its kind, meeting anywhere in the world, a congregation of its kind, that there's at least one person who is at this moment testing the patience of God at the point of time. How long do you intend to continue that way? How long? How long? The time factor is very, very important. Again and again, God warns his people, and particularly his people. He says, He who being often reproved, or he who often hears the message of God and hardens his heart, shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. Now, friends, those aren't my words. Those are God's. I believe God will stand back of his word. His word says, Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. His word says, Go to now, ye that say today or tomorrow, we'll go into such and such a city, and there we'll buy and sell and get gain. For you know not what shall be on the morrow. You'd better be about the business at hand concerning eternal things and destination and destiny now, because you have no promise whatsoever of a tomorrow. And Elijah says, how long? How long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow him. That makes sense, doesn't it? But if Baal, then follow him. Now you find the token of the problem with the people in the next sentence. And the people answered him not a word. I believe the fundamental trouble in America tonight is indeed found in the silent majority. It's found in the problem of indecision and compromise. We're standing in the midst of millions of people all about us in this great nation of the earth who are undecided about which way to go. And I personally believe that the majority of these people have nearly lost the ability to make a righteous decision and have practically lost the courage to decide anything right. And God's question addressed through Elijah to the people of Israel centuries ago is perfectly pertinent to us tonight. Now, because our time is brief, I want to reduce the text into some three categories and just simply quickly share them with you. First of all, Elijah places before the people a divine alternative. He said, you are between two opinions. And he identifies them. You have an opinion about the Lord, and you're uncertain about whether or not he's God. You have an opinion about Baal, and you're uncertain about whether or not he is to be recognized as God. Now, let me simply declare to you that Elijah had no doubt about it. When he used the word opinions, he was accommodating the people. And when he said if concerning the lordship of the true God, he was not accommodating them with a conviction of his own. He was simply accommodating them in light of the way they were acting and in the light of the way they apparently believed on this occasion and in the immediate history past. You see, to Elijah, the reality of the lordship of Jehovah God was not an opinion. It was a reality. It was a fact. There was no if in his mind or heart except an accommodating if with which he approached the people. He knew the truth about the matter. And furthermore, he was about to demonstrate it before the people. In just a short while, everybody forgot the matter of opinions. And one God of the two who were in question and at issue here ceased to be an opinion anymore. And he became a reality, and that's Jehovah God. He placed before them a divine alternative. He identifies this alternative in one word on each side, the Lord on the one side and Baal on the other. Now, I want us to get the picture of these two. The word translated Lord is the old Hebrew word for Jehovah or Yahweh. It's a rather strung out translation of the old word for the I am God. It's actually a verb taken over into a name, a noun, or a title. And the verb is the verb that describes the eternality of God. The fact is that God is eternal in existence. And that wherever you see God, at any point in history as we recognize it, God is always pictured as a present tense God. The first moment of creation is right now, present tense to God. The last moment of the existence of the world is right now, present tense to God. This moment is right now, present tense to God. There are no past and future to God. God is the immediately present tense God, and this is the meaning of this title. Now, if you want to know what this meant to Elijah and should have meant to the people, look down in verse 36 of this same chapter. He identifies him as he speaks to him as the Lord God of three people, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. Now, the word Israel here is not the word for the nation, it's the word for the person, Jacob. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, this is very, very decidedly important for us to see this, because this means that this God, who on the one hand is at issue here as far as his reality is concerned, is a God whom Elijah reminds them has had the most pertinent part in their history that is imaginable. Now, he identifies him as the God of Abraham. This means he's a God of revelation. You remember Abraham was the one way off in a pagan land, having been reared among an idolatrous people, and one day God appeared to him. He said, arise and leave your people and get out of this land. Leave your belongings. Take your immediate family and nobody else. And he revealed himself to him in terms of being a blessing to the nations of the world and the peoples of society in that generation and all generations to come. And Abraham arose to go. Then he identifies him as not only the God of Abraham, but the God of Isaac. Thus he is seen as a God of redemption.